Okay, let's get started. We got to, I think we're going to probably go the whole hearing today. So the Ag and Environment, Economic Development, Agriculture Division, for February 11th, 2015, will come to order. Commissioner Landwehr, you want to start out? Commissioner Landwehr, you want to start out? We have to be out of here by about 10 minutes to 2 because there's another committee coming in, so I'm fairly certain we'll probably go through the entire time allotted today for this particular division, so, and potentially it could carry over into Monday, depending upon if people come in and start asking you lots of questions. So, anyway, Commissioner, welcome to the committee, and go ahead with your budget report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here today, and Mr. Chairman, members, it's my intention today to really kind of kick off the budget overview discussion. We have our division directors here who can explain in much more detail what it is that we're proposing in the governor's budget. But I thought, Mr. Chairman, members, especially for the members that may have not been involved in the DNR budget setting process before, I'd spend just a little bit of time talking about the mission of the department and some of the challenges that we're facing. So members, the presentation starting today is going to be kind of twofold. I'm first off going to do a little overview of the mission and the organization of the department, just barely get into the governor's recommendations, and hand it off to Barb Julek here, who's the chief financial officer for the Department of Natural Resources. It's my intention just to give you a glimpse, a snapshot of what it is we do at the DNR. So many of you have seen this before. We really have, by virtue of statute, kind of a three-part mission. We are obviously big in outdoor recreation. You'll hear about our parks and trails. We do a lot with setting hunting and fishing seasons, of course, and we are big in things like bird watching, snowmobiling, all the types of outdoor recreation that Minnesotans treasure. We have a role, obviously, in natural resource protection, and you'll hear about some of our programs that protect rare natural resources, the threatened and endangered species, as well as County Biological Survey. And importantly, something that sometimes people overlook is our role with respect to economic development, and in particular in rural Minnesota, and perhaps particular in northern Minnesota. We often cite timber, tourism, taconite, the three T's, as being the role that we have with respect to managing 12 million acres of state mineral rights. We have some 5 million acres of commercial forest that we sell timber off of. And I want to point out as well something that sometimes gets forgotten is we also administer the state water appropriation permit programming. Surely for all economic development, the availability of good and reliable water is a key element of economic development. Our charge, our challenge really, is finding the balance between these three things. And so when you look at the Venn diagram there, it shows a DNR in the middle. That's the place where we like to be, where we're balancing all of these concerns really to promote a sustainable quality of life for Minnesota. We have what we call a matrix organization. So we are organized by discipline as well as geographically. This is a high-level chart of our organization. As you can see, reporting to me is Deputy Commissioner Dave Shad. Dave is really the operations manager for the department, really does the day-to-day work. Three assistant commissioners, Barb Naramore, Bob Meyer, and most recently Sarah Stroman. You can see they have responsibility over overseeing our seven divisions. Many of the divisions directors are here today. So for Ecological and Water Resources, it's Luke Skinner, Forestry, Forrest Bowl, Lands and Minerals, Jess Richards, Enforcement, Colonel Ken Soaring, Fish and Wildlife, Ed Bogus, Parks and Trails, Erica Rivers, and Operations Services, which is kind of our backroom functions of human resources, communications, fleet, programs like that. That's our Operations Services Division. And again, our budget is broken down by these divisions. You'll hear from each of these people very soon. We also are organized, in addition to being organized by division, we're organized by region. We have four regions in the state. We have Northwest and Northeast region, a Southern region, and a Central region that essentially spans from Lake Mille Lacs down to Houston County. Our Northwest regional director is Greg Nelson. Our Northeast regional director is Lori Dowling Hansen. Our South director is Dennis Fredrickson, and our central director is Keith Parker. Each of those is responsible for sort of balancing the divisions, the divisional or coordinating divisions in each of those geographic areas. You can see that we have over 200 offices located in the state. We have at peak times, which is typically during the summer, some 4,700 employees. Most of those are seasonal or part-time. We have the equivalent of 2,700 full-time staff on an annual basis. In addition to the office spaces that we have 2,700 total buildings. They include, obviously, things from sanitation buildings at a state park to Wayside Rest at Teteguch and many other buildings. We manage 5,000 campsites. You can read the numbers there, 2,300 miles of forest roads, 5,000 fleet vehicles, 1,800 watercraft. Because of the geographic nature of our organization, we put a lot of miles on vehicles. We have 1,600 state vehicles, and we put on annually about 16 million miles. Most of our offices are what we call area offices. They will manage resources in a multi-county area. They spend a lot of time going between sites. Mr. Chairman, members, the components of our workforce, which are, you know, a lot of people and a lot of operational expenses, really drives our budget. So when inflation strikes the country, it strikes us particularly onerously. Some of the state agencies pass money through. I think of education and human services. They pass their money through on contracts. We spend the money directly, and so inflation hits us in particular. This, I think, is a graph you probably have not seen in the past. I find it to be a really revealing graph. Let me do a little explanation of the graph. On the left side is our overall budget number. So you see it goes from 0 to 500 million. On the bottom is the fiscal year that we're looking at. The bars indicate the revenues to the department, expenditures to the department from different sources. So you'll see the very bottom blue bar is general fund direct to the department. So it's specified appropriation to the department for direct expenses. Whereas if you look at the top of that black line, there's a light blue bar, that's general open. We have a number of different funds that come to the departments. We've got the general direct, we've got the natural resources fund, as it shows on the legend on the right, game and fish fund, we get federal aid reimbursement. We have special revenue funds, and which are typically proceeds from, for instance, sales of things at gift shops. We get reinvest in Minnesota, and we get gifts. And then the items above that, the general open, the heritage enhancement, natural resources, the outdoor heritage fund, the clean water fund, parks and trails funds, those are the constitutional funds that come to the department. So if you look again at the two black lines across the graph, the bottom black line is the amount of general direct funds in real dollars that comes to the, or nominal dollars that comes to the department. You can see it's gone from about 90 million in FY04 to about 60 million in FY14. If you look at the black line above that, the top black line, that represents sort of our base funding. Those are dollars that come by virtue of appropriation, more or less have tails on them. Everything above that is essentially one-time funding. So it is in particular the constitutional funding that we get on a two-year basis. We come back 2 years later and we request that again. Some of the significance of this graph is that if you look at the base funding for the department, it has been essentially flat for over a decade. If you look at the general fund for the department, it's actually declined by 50 cents over the decade. We've made up the difference between general fund and overall base budget by virtue of looking at additional fees and increases in fees like the hunting and fishing licenses. Multiple challenges with that. It's very hard, if not impossible, to move money between one fund and another. So, for instance, if our snowmobile account is going into the red, we can't draw from the game and fish fund to make that up. General fund obviously has much more flexibility. As we have gotten less and less general fund, we've lost some of the flexibility to manage our budget in tight circumstances. Another example of that, our Division of Enforcement often provides first response in emergencies, so you think of floods or wind blowdowns, things like that. Those are public emergency events. They aren't something we can code to, hunting and fishing or snowmobile or something else. So we need general fund to pay for that service. And when we're out of it, we get ourselves into kind of a box. And the last thing I point out, Mr. Chairman, members, is that all of the stuff above the top black line is really important work. It is the dollars that the citizens gave us by virtue of constitutional amendments that we want you to do more. You're doing a lot. We want you to do more. And so they gave us that money through the constitutional amendment. That represents additional work that in many cases has to be supported by some of the dollars below that bar. We apply for an Outdoor Heritage Fund grant, for instance. It does not pay for all of our costs to administer that grant. So we have to find other sources of funding to pay for that, some of that work. And so even though our responsibilities have increased below that line, for instance, we have a new state park at Vermilion. We have a new state rec area at LaSalle and at Cuyuna. We've increased our responsibilities, our obligations. The operating fund for the department has essentially stayed flat, and at the same time, we're incurring these additional expenses by virtue of the legacy funds. So point in that, Mr. Chairman, members, is that we're really tightly tied up in a box here with some of the things that we can do and some of the funding situations we find ourselves in. Next slide.
Just for the record, quorum's present. Go ahead.
Complementing that, Mr. Chairman, members, is a roster of our full-time equivalents. So I mentioned we have about 2,700 full-time equivalents. Some of that is seasonal employees, so it's 4,700 employees. You can see that for the last decade, our FTE complement has been pretty much flat. The general fund in particular has seen a big decline in the number of employees it's supporting, and we're shifting those employees onto dedicated funds over that period of time, notably in game and fish and the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which is, again, one-time appropriations. So, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Julek in a moment. Our really top priorities this year are for us to maintain our services. The inflation that is hitting us over the next 2 years, again, getting at those special revenue funds versus the general fund, really are challenging us to provide some very basic levels of service, especially with respect to our Division of Parks and Trails. We need to respond to certain emerging issues. We want to be more proactive in reaching younger generations, for instance, with respect to social media and getting information in front of them with respect to outdoor recreation. And then to continue the investment, the strategic investment of the legacy funds to the highest priorities while we are supporting those with the operations of the department. Well, Mr. Chairman, at that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Julek to go into some of the numbers. But prior to her doing that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Does anybody have any questions of the commissioner? You have to leave, right? Is that what's going on here?
I can stay a few more minutes, Mr. Chairman, if that's beneficial.
Okay. Are there any questions of the commissioner? Just the three T's, timber, taconite, and tourism, we want to add a C to that, so just keep working on that, all right?
What's the third T?
A C, copper.
To date, not a penny has come from copper, as you know, Mr. Chairman.
I know,
so we're still talking about the moneymakers here.
Okay, all right. Okay. Okay. I guess you're excused, Commissioner. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Okay. Ms. Julek, just say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Barb Julek, Chief Financial Officer, Department of Natural Resources. As the Commissioner mentioned, we do have a number of proposals. In total, those proposals are requesting a net $105 million, but within that, $72 million is from legacy funds. Again, those funding resources are not part of our base funding, so they are counted new every biennium. So absent the legacy funding, we are requesting between our three main operating funds, General Fund, Game and Fish Fund, Natural Resources Fund, a net of $33 million. When I say net, it's because there are some revenues tied to these proposals. As you'll see on the bottom, there is $12 million of revenues associated with the proposals, bringing the total request to a net $105 million.
Are those fee increases?
There are some fee increases. Generally, the three areas, there's Pittman, accelerated Pittman Robertson's drawdown is one source. There's a parks fee increase for daily passes and annual passes that Director Rivers will detail, and then an increase to the AIS surcharge for your boat registration that Director Skinner will detail when he gets to his change pages. Those are the three areas of revenue changes.
Okay.
Again, looking at the base budget for the department and how the governor's recommendation compares to that, these are gross numbers, so not including revenues. So again, on the far right-hand side, the governor's recommendation, a little rounding issue, absent legacy funds, is requesting $44 million of an expenditure increase. Comparing that to the 16-17 biennium, which has a $938 million base starting point, that represents about a 5% increase. However, comparing that to a 14-15, which is not reflected on this chart, it's about a 1.6% increase. So the governor's recommendation would be 1.6% above our 14-15 operating base. As we move from 14 to 15 into 16 and 17, we did have a number of base adjustments, and I just wanted to focus on the three operating areas. In the general fund, this is removal of some one-time appropriations in the Parks and Trails and Forestry Division. In Game and Fish Fund, this is the removal of one-time appropriations plus adjustment of some statutory revenues, which then reduce our spending authority. And the same with the Natural Resource Fund. It's reduction of statutory revenues, therefore reducing our spending authority. And so that's what the base adjustment is there. Looking at the governor's budget as a whole, base appropriation plus governor's change items, the governor is recommending about $1 billion biannual budget for the department. It is divided into a number of funds. We mainly operate out of general fund direct, natural resources, special revenue, and game and fish fund. The general fund direct, which is on the lower left-hand corner of the pie chart, is primarily used for parks and trails operations, forestry, some water programs and AS programs within the Eco Waters and Resource Division, and then enforcement gets some dollars there. Under general fund open, we operate three programs out of there. Open appropriations are dedicated in purpose, but not necessarily restricted in an amount. So this is the amount that's been budgeted for those items. It includes payment in lieu of taxes to counties, tribal treaty payments, and open fire account. Natural Resource Fund, I'll get into a little more detail on that, but that's primarily where a lot of the recreational fees are deposited. We also run our timber sales through that account and a number of mining programs and land programs. Special revenue account, this accounts for 24% of our budget. A couple areas in here I'll point out. It includes a number of accounts with specific authority for fees or revenues that are then dedicated statutorily to the commissioner. This can include cooperative agreements, interagency agreements, professional services, and, as the commissioner mentioned, sales at state parks or state fair sales. It also includes our internal billing services, such as we centralize a number of our operational support services and operate under an internal billing structure. This includes fleet, rent, operational support services, IT, and the like. Clean water is about 2%. Clean water legacy is about 2% of our budget. Small federal, 3%. Game and Fish Fund is another large operating portion, about 21% of the budget. This is primarily where your fish and wildlife license and sports hunting license are deposited. And I'll have a little more detail on an upcoming slide. And then I think I skipped on the upper left-hand center, the Parks and Trails Legacy. It's about 5% of our budget. Funding here is based on a 40-40-20 split, 40% being requested to go to the DNR, 40% for the Metropolitan Council, and 20% to Greater Minnesota. And again, this is how this grant, these funds have been operated since 2011. What you see here in the governor's recommendation would represent the 40% for DNR and the 20% for Greater Minnesota pass-through. Just another cut at that same $1 billion request by division. You'll see our largest division is Parks and Trails, followed by Fish and Wildlife. And again, under operational services, a number of these items under that slice of the pie deal with our internal billing for some direct program support, such as fleet, rent, facilities management. And Director Martinson will get into detail on that when she presents her budget. And how we spend our money, overall, this looks at the 2014-15 spending. About a third of our spending is on compensation. Another 20% is on grants to outside entities. 13% for operational expenses such as fleet equipment, rent, and supplies, 26% for professional or technical contracts, and then 7% for capital outlay, which can include land acquisition and capital improvement projects. Game and Fish Fund, a real high level of these two funds. Revenue into the Game and Fish Fund comes from three primary sources, the first of which are the hunting and fishing licenses. Those are the two bluish pieces of the pie there. That accounts for about 44% of the revenue to that fund. The second is from from federal fisheries and wildlife reimbursements. And finally, about 12% comes from dedication of lottery in lieu of sales tax revenue that are deposited into the Heritage Enhancement Account. Other revenues in here include fish and wildlife stamps, surcharges, application fees, interest earnings, and there's a transfer for police state aid that goes to the Enforcement Division for training. Again, looking at the Game and Fish Fund, how was it spent? There is a handout in your packet that lists the 11 accounts within the Game and Fish Fund, the largest of which is the Game and Fish Operating Account. This is where all the fishing and hunting licenses are deposited and the federal Game and Fish federal reimbursements are deposited into that fund. Funds are used for game and fish related activities, but they are restricted in their use by the Federal Aid Wildlife Restoration Act and the Federal Aid Fish Restoration Act. And again, each of those funds are described in this handout. Natural Resources Fund is another large operating fund for the department. The largest piece of revenue into this fund is the gas tax. A portion of gas tax is transferred to the department, and it goes into a number of recreational vehicle accounts, a number of recreational accounts within this fund. This number, $62 million, does include the governor's recommendation, and I'll have a slide displaying a little more details on that recommendation. Other revenues into this fund include, again, going clockwise from the gas tax, water appropriation and permit fees, timber sales revenue. Under the other category, there are a number of transfers in and out of this account, plus donations. License and registration, those are your recreational vehicles, such as snowmobile, ATV, outdoor or off-road vehicles. There are a number of lottery in lieu dedicated accounts in here. The statute allows for a little over 72% of the lottery in lieu revenues to be dedicated to the department. 50% goes to the Heritage Enhancement Account from the Game and Fish Fund. The balance of it goes to the natural resources, of which 22% is for state parks and trails, 22% for metropolitan parks and trail grants, 3% for local trail grants, and 2% goes to grants for the various zoos, including Minnesota Zoo, Como Park Zoo, and the Duluth Zoo. And then the state, there are also some mining fees in this account, and then the state park fees, again, which are being increased under the governor's budget, would be in here as well. And the directors for their various programs will get into more detail on those. How these are spent, again, there is another one-pager in your handouts on the Natural Resource Fund. There are 21 separate accounts in the Natural Resources Fund. Those are all detailed on their revenue deposited into there and what kind of spending come out of there. The majority of spending in here is in the Parks and Trails area, and it's primarily for recreational programs. But again, there's also a water management program, a forest management program, and some mining activities that go on in here. I did mention the governor's 6.5% wholesale tax proposal. This does have an impact to the Department of Natural Resources budget. It does bring in for this upcoming biennium a little over $20 million. It falls into the water rec account based on motorboat activity, the snowmobile account, the all-terrain vehicle account, off-highway motorcycle and off-road vehicle, as well as the forest road account. The current base is around $21 million, so this is about a 50% annual increase in the revenue for each of those accounts from the gas tax revenues.
That's if it passes.
Correct.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, on that, so the same calculation would be kept for the 6.5% sales tax or gross receipts tax if that passes, to keep funding, to go into these accounts. Is that correct?
Ms. Schulich.
So, Mr. Chair, it would operate proportionally the same as the current program does, just okay. against a additional tax base.
Now, Mr. Chair, correct me if I'm wrong, but the legislature could elect to just dedicate all that 6.5% sales tax to roads and not have it blended off or proportionately going into these other accounts as well. That would be an option. I'm not saying that would happen, but that could be an option.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, the legislature would have its discretion on how it would like to operate or legislate that program.
Sure. So last question, Mr. Chair. For the purpose of your proposal or budget, you're presuming that the same proportion would go in off the 6.5% sales tax on gas?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, the governor's budget would propose the
proposes
same proportion.
That. Okay, thanks.
Change the same.
The impact of the gas tax impacts, obviously, a number of our recreational accounts. Four are here as an example. The current November forecast has a number of accounts in the Natural Resources Fund going negative within the upcoming biennium. And you can see specifically for water, recreation, snowmobile, and all-terrain, they are going negative within the next 4 years. And the off-highway vehicle approaches that within the 4 years. The impact of the governor's proposal would to keep those accounts in the black.
Let's ask
them a question.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was sort of wondering here why, on the previous slide, why are they going into the black? And then what funds, maybe you could just restate that a little bit, would bring them up a little higher?
Mr. Chair, just based on annual revenue projections over time against annual appropriations that had maybe structural imbalances over time or maybe one-year blips in revenues. A lot of these are seasonally affected, so the revenues can go up and down depending on the weather. And so over time, both of those impacts may converge, leading to a projected deficit. And then the governor's proposal would increase the revenues to the funds. There are some requested expenditures out of the snowmobile account, but primarily his recommendation is a revenue increase to those funds.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask what seems like a stupid question, but preface this. So like right now, because they're not snow plowing, some of the cities may be saving money. Are we saving money, or is it costing us more money to make snow in, like, the snowmobile account? And how does the lack of snow impact the snowmobile account?
Mr. Chair, I grab Director Rivers.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Erica Rivers, Director of Minnesota State Parks and Trails. We do are saving money this year from the snowmobile account because we are not grooming as many trails. However, the recent projections that I saw from last Friday also show that our registrations are down by about $2 million this year and projected to remain that way. So these accounts are really being driven into the red by increased costs of doing business, both for the grant and aid clubs that help manage our large system of recreational trails as well as the department. As many of you are aware, gas prices have gone up. We are seeing a brief reprieve in that. But when you have a system that is highly dependent on grooming and large machinery, those costs add up and are what's driving these accounts into the red at this point.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Julie, I apologize if this has already been covered, because I came in late. But have you walked through the data that was collected to analyze the usage by these different accounts and the rationales for why these accounts exist and why those monies do flow out of the gas tax based on the usage by these. And there's a study that the department did that estimated some of the snowmobile use and ATV use. Is there something going on there that I'm not understanding completely?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I have not looked at how this formula, the proportional formula, was originally derived, and the governor, I do not believe, is recommending a change to that. So, no.
But, Mr. Chair, Mr. Julek, there is a formula that is used to derive this amount, and my recollection is that there was fair amount of study done to estimate what the usage was, and hence the formula was developed that allocated these dollars into these accounts. And so there's a rationale for this. This is not just something that was kind of decided upon. There's a rationale for these dollars to flow into those separate accounts. Is I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, you are correct. Okay.
Thank you.
And Senator Scoy, I think you go back to that one slide, Mr. Julek. I think you came in after this slide was up there. And this is a projection if the gas tax increase goes into effect as to what they think the effect will have on each one of those accounts. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I see that in my paperwork here.
And Ms. Julek, that particular slide then indicates that we're not getting enough revenue to handle the expenses of the account. How much of each one of these accounts is enforcement?
Mr. Chair, I have that with me in the fund balance statements. And maybe if we can go into Director Skinner or Director Richards' presentation, I can start.
Figure that out.
I can point
okay.
That out.
All right. Okay. Are there any other questions, Mr. Chair? Senator Westrum.
Related
to that account going up about 50% if the 6.5 were to pass, seems like a lot of money. What would we do with it all? In my CERN would be you inject a lot of money, you can all of a sudden have a system find ways to use it up and we get no more trails, or we pay a lot more for the same thing we're getting today. What would we do with it? Would we build more trails? Would we set it aside to do other things, or would we just let it build into the system and raise the level of reimbursement and pay more for in the future for what we're getting done today for the price we're getting it done for?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Senator Westrum, that's a great question. Each of these accounts have dedicated or statutory sideboards around them on what the monies can be spent for. So, for example, the water recreation account is for the establishment of water access sites, the rehabilitation of those. We have funding that is statutorily directed in statute. Snowmobile accounts the same way, ATV account, off-road motorcycle, and off-road vehicle. So there are limitations on what those funding sources can be used for. And just to take a little step back to the gas tax itself, the Constitution specifically allows for this to come out because the Constitution says the gas tax and the monies that it generates go into the highway user tax fund that is paid for by people basically buying gas for their cars. So these are people, residents of the state of Minnesota, who are paying gas taxes that is dedicated constitutionally for roads, bridges, maintenance of the system,
right,
that they're not using that gas purposes for. So, I mean, there are studies that have been done. Senator Scoy is absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. We've worked with the University of Minnesota, other economists nationwide, to develop these studies and then present them to the legislature. So I think there is specific statutory direction on the spending that these accounts can come from. Enforcement is part of that spending, but also trail development and maintenance as well.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, thank you. Would development or expanding into some of the areas of the state that maybe don't have as much of a trail system be a piece or a component of what might happen if it were to pass? Or I know we're talking hypotheticals here, but
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, possibly. I mean, there's a lot of people, for example, the off-road vehicle folks, the trucks, they want a lot more trails, right? We have 30 miles of trails. You've probably heard that. They want probably three times as many, four or five times as many, whatever they can have out there, right? So working with stakeholders and the legislature, trying to figure out to develop a system that we can afford and maintain into the future is critical. But I'm not saying that these dollars wouldn't be used to expand the system. Probably the motorboats, our water access sites are pretty well defined. We need to take care of them. Snowmobile trails, the grant and aid system, I think is there for the most part, making sure we're maintaining it and providing the clubs the resources that they need. Mm-hmm. Is where the dollars would go. The all-terrain vehicle account, there's a desire for more trails there, specifically more technical-type trails that are sustainable throughout the state for these smaller-type machines. And the off-road vehicle account, I talked about the desire for more trails as well. So there as well, the growth would probably be in the two, the ATV and the off-road trail system, more than any place else if that were to occur.
Okay. So, and Mr. Meyer, you piqued a question. Does it all go into one account so there isn't a specific snowmobile account versus ATV account? It's all into maintained trails?
Mr. Chair, Senator Western, I apologize. I did not understand that question. No, they are separate accounts within the Natural Resources Fund.
I see. Very
good. We have fund balances and historic spending balances and appropriations for each account.
Okay, thanks.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those same lines, and the people can answer it as they go along, how much of this, so we're getting new trails and new parks, or, you know, varying degrees of new trails and new parks, but there's not always maintenance money that goes with that. So how much of this, you know, future money or gas tax money is also for maintenance issues that you get new facilities and 5-10 years down the line, you do need to maintain them or preserve them and keep them, you know, to the level that people want. And so how much of this addition here is to maintain the system that we have and preserve it? And especially the new stuff that is adding is going in that, you know, maintenance money isn't attached to it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dietzick, but we aren't, first of all, counting our eggs before they're hatched or chickens before they're hatched, right? So we would need to get the money into the account and then try to figure out what we have. I think, again, the system that we have does need maintenance dollars, and unfortunately there's other pieces of the outdoor recreation. I think I don't have accounts that people pay into for those needs as well. But, again, we can get those plans, what they are right now, but we don't have any of these dollars spent in our minds. I think it's going to take a lot of work to get them there if they do end up there. So,
as a follow-up, but you, am I wrong to characterize that they are all in need of maintenance? It's not like you have every trail is at, you know, the level of grade A level that we would want it at, not just from a aesthetic, but also a safety issue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, correct. A lot of the system is the grant and aid system, for example. These local clubs are out there every fall cutting down branches, filling in ruts, making sure that they're maintained. We do the same thing with our ATV state trail system and all of our other state trail systems. But again, it's taking care of what you have versus new versus all of those things. And I'm very glad that you bring this point up because it is an important discussion for us to have, not only in the outdoor recreation system, but for the state facilities as well. So we can get that. We'll get you a breakout of what we project. Currently, we're spending on rehab versus repair versus maintenance.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Myers, as a senator who carries bills almost every year for trail expansion, bonding bills, can you tell me, my thought would be that the majority of the money that goes into the construction of new trails would be through the Capital Investment Committee, these bonding requests that legislators carry for trail development, and that some of this might be used for planning or design, but majority of this money that would be a result of the gas tax formula would go into maintenance. Am I right in that assumption, or is that this majority of this, or some of this going to go into construction, or isn't most of the trail construction money coming out of the bonding bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, another great question, because trails aren't trails, right? Most of the bills that come out of the bonding bill are for state bicycle trails. These dedicated accounts, these user-driven programs, if I'll call them that, most of the funding for those that system is paid for by the user. The systems that are funded in the most of the, I believe there's approximately $20 million funded in the last bonding bill for different trail segments, which were design, development, acquisition. We don't talk about what do we do once they're there. The rehab of those paved trail systems, it's about $100,000 a mile to rehab a trail system, the Paul Bunyan Trail or things like that. So we need to continue down this line of discussion, and at some point in time, it would be great to have a dedicated source of revenue for those bike trails as well.
And can you can use Parks and Trail Legacy money for that also, right?
Mr. Chairman, we do spend some of our dollars on that. And when the legacy bill is before your committee, we can certainly provide a historical background of what we spent. Taking care of what we have is one of the four pillars within our legacy spending. But we also have other legacy-type opportunities we're spending those dollars on as well.
Okay, and I know Ms. Julek's looking this up, but is how much of this new money that is projected on the 6.5% gas taxes for enforcement?
Mr. Chairman, we will have those dollars for you present within the enforcement budget, but enforcement is a key part of taking care of what we have, our citizens of the state of Minnesota,
I'm not sure they're safe.
I'm
not questioning if it's important or not. I just want to know if it's all for enforcement or if it's actually for trails also.
Mr. Chairman, there is a split of the funds that go there, and we work with the user groups to discuss those funds. Last night we were meeting with MinUSA talking about some of the change items that are present in this budget, addressing their concerns and looking at how can we move forward together as a group. So we'll have those spreadsheet for you where these dedicated funds are breakout. I think the best thing to do possibly on that note would be to work with Mr. Mueller and get you all copies of the current fund statements and kind of break out where that funding is being spent.
Senator Scoyne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Myers. So when the Heartland Trail is expanded and it's used for snowmobiles in the wintertime and bikes in the summertime, would some of that trail development money come from both of those accounts, or one of them would be part of the capital investment bill and one would come out of the snowmobile account, or how does the funding happen for those trails that are multiple use?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scott, that's a great question, and each trail is a little bit different based upon its use. Let me get back to you on that specific example, but where there are different surfaces, there typically or sometimes are different sources of funding attached to that as well, and it depends on how the appropriation language is written as well. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'd look forward to a little more information on that then.
Thank you. We'll make sure you get that.
Okay. Julek, I think, unless you have something to add,
I'll be over here.
Okay, we'll bring up Mr. Richards. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jess Richards. I'm the Director of the Lands and Minerals Division for the DNR. And I'll give you just a brief overview of what the division does and our budget, as well as one change item that we are proposing this year. As most of you know, the Lands and Minerals Division is charged with managing over 12 million acres of state-owned mineral resources for the benefit of all Minnesotans. And we do that through the processes of mineral leasing, monitoring exploration, and permitting. And in our permitting work, we ensure that the mines are developed in an environmentally sound way and that they're reclaimed for future use. The division also provides real estate leadership for the management of over 5.5 million acres of state-owned land. So essentially, we provide anything that a realtor would provide for the rest of the department when it comes to everything from leasing of hunting shacks to processing large acquisitions to the sale of surplus state lands. Fully staffed, the Lands and Minerals Division is approximately 90 to 95 people, and we have a little over half of those located in Greater Minnesota in our offices in Hibbing, Bemidji, Brainerd, Grand Rapids, New Ulm, and then the remainder are in St. Paul. So first, I'd just like to give a few highlights of some outcomes.
What do they do in St. Paul?
Mr. Chair, members, we support our Hibbing office.
Right. Good answer.
Mr. Chair, I'll go on. As you know, Minnesota ranks number 3 overall in the United States for non-fuel mineral production. And Minnesota's iron ore mines produce over 80% of the raw materials for first pour steel in the United States. Obviously, Minnesota's been a big part of the development of this country. And I just want to briefly share what Lands and Minerals does with respect to some of our work. And as you can see on this slide, we had another record year with mineral revenues of over $70 million. This eclipsed the previous record by $20 million. This is primarily the result of taconite mining, and the mines were mining more state ore, and also we negotiated some pretty good royalty rates with the mines. These revenues go to school districts, university systems, and even local taxing districts. In the last year, we've issued about 6 to 7 mine amendments. The largest was the expansion of the Mintac mine of 450 acres. And over the last 2 years, we've overseen the reclamation of over 10,000 acres of previously mined lands. On the real estate side of things, we completed about 140 real estate acquisitions, sold approximately 290 acres of state land in the last 6 months, and we also managed land decisions for the department through what we call strategic land asset management. This past September, you may have heard that we completed the Sac-Sim exchange, land exchange with the Conservation Fund in St. Louis County, which is going to result in the restoration of about 24,000 acres of heavily ditched wetlands in this area, and at the same time, it provides the school trust fund with more highly productive forest lands. So the citizens of Minnesota care a lot more about the work that's done in Lands and Minerals than ever before, and we've taken great efforts to make our work more transparent and accessible to Minnesotans. We are fortunate to have some of the best scientists and the best real estate experts in our division. So drilling down a little bit into our budget, what you can see here is that the largest segment of our past and our proposed budget is general fund, and about 95% of that money is dedicated to payment in lieu of taxes, and I'll talk more about that in just a second. Beyond that, I'm going to give you just a little more detail on what the division does, and I'll kind of describe how then it relates to these different pieces of the pie here. So we have a few different pieces of our division. So mine permitting and coordination, as well as our reclamation program, this is kind of our regulatory arm of the division. And they do everything from coordinating all mining-related permits within the DNR and with other state agencies and federal partners. This is where we house some of our occupation tax positions that we obtained last year. And we also have now started taking on mineland hydrology work in that group. We also have a reclamation group primarily housed in Hibbing, which does our mine inspections, wetland reviews, does a lot of our environmental research on things like mercury and sulfate and Duluth complex rock. This is where we employ geochemists, geologists, and research scientists, and it's also where we house some of the rulemaking that we're working on silica sand. The funding for these two sections is primarily through the mining administration account, which is comes out of the Natural Resource Fund. There's also some general fund for both research and permitting work and some industry match dollars for the research work that's considered special revenue with respect to this this pie chart. The next section we have is our mineral potential section, and this is kind of our rock hounds, so to speak. And they manage 3 million feet of drill core in our drill core library in Hibbing, which has no fees, Mr. Chair. And they also work on mapping aggregate and potential. They look at mineral potential across the board for Minnesota. So I brought a couple examples of some of the work that our mineral potential group does. The first one is a dimension stone that one of our geologists has identified in Lake County. And this is one, you know, it's not out there, it's not being mined. It's something that we think would be a good dimension stone that could be marketed someday for countertops and things like that. And so that's one that's out there. Somebody want to give me a hand? Forest Bowl.
Always willing, you know.
Forestry. And the second one is this mineral potential group is where, like I mentioned, our drill core library. Many of you were able to come tour the drill core library last year. It's a great facility, one of the best in the nation. This is a piece of drill core. From the Duluth complex, you can see in here, you'll be able to see bits of green and shiny materials, and that is the, you know, copper and nickel and other materials that are found in the Duluth complex.
So, and have you been able to estimate how much the revenues would be for the school fund on the copper and nickel deposits?
Mr. Chair, members, there's three deposits that, if you just looked at those three, the Masabi deposit, or the Maturi deposit, I should say, the Masaba deposit and the Birch Lake deposit, those three deposits have a lot of school trust minerals in them, and if they were mined, they would generate somewhere in the range of $2 billion to the trust. So the work in this section is primarily funded through the minerals management account, and which, like I said before, is part of the Natural Resource Fund. They also receive some general fund for aggregate work and for the Drill Corps Library. We also have a mine engineering section, and this group monitors the development of the mine. They use high-tech mapping. They negotiate mineral royalty rates. They're almost all out of our Hibbing office, and these are the ones who focus on collecting, ensuring the state gets the right amount of royalty for the state-owned ore that's mined. I've got two more handouts, and then I'm done with my props for the day, Mr. Chair. But this is an example of state-owned ore at HibTech. This is raw ore. We've got a little magnet on here. You can see the bands of iron in the ore, and you can put the magnet on there. You can tell where the iron content is higher. So this is school trust ore, state-owned ore at HibTech. And then, of course, Mr. Chair, I'd be remiss not to hand out a little bit of taconite pellets, because this is the bread and butter of Minnesota's mining operations, and it's the bread and butter of royalty collection for Minnesota. And so our inspectors, our work in the mining engineering group, monitors the production and the mining of that ore to ensure that the school trust and other entities get their correct amounts from royalties. For real estate, we have our land acquisition section and legal services section. And like I said, they specialize in the acquisition work, and title review, negotiations, closing. They're really like a real estate broker. They also do our legal services for not only real estate, but also for our minerals work. And they're closely connected to our appraisal people. This work in our real estate section is really funded through special revenues, basically internal billing. So we bill to the other divisions within the DNR for the services we provide on real estate in acquisition. We also have a regional operations group for real estate. And these are the folks that handle the leadership, real estate leadership, for the management of the current state portfolio of state lands. So they're the ones who handle the leasing, utility licensing, any land management issues, trespass, and they have about $400,000 a year of general fund for utility licensing, and they also do what we call a service level agreement through special revenues with the other divisions for the management of state-owned lands. And then finally, we have a survey section. And just as you would imagine, these are surveyors. We not only contract out to private entities to do surveys of state lands, but this group monitors everything from new acquisition surveys to trespass or other issues that we have to deal with, surveys on existing state lands. Again, they do both internal billing for professional services and also service level agreements. So when you move out all the pass-through monies for PILT and special revenues that go from mineral receipts, the vast majority of the lands and minerals budget goes to compensation and staffing costs. And lands and minerals has very little capital expenses. Really, it's the Hibbing office and the Drill Corps Library. And I encourage you to visit. If you haven't had a chance, if you didn't get to come on the tour, we would be happy to host any one of you or the whole committee if you want to, Mr. Chair. Okay, moving on. Just a quick little bit more detail on payment in lieu of taxes. As you know, payment in lieu of taxes is local government aid payments that are made by the state to the counties for tax-exempt natural resource lands. And they're distributed among counties, townships, and in some instances, the school districts as well. And these payments are made from an open appropriation from the general fund. And what this slide shows is the increases in PILT payments over time. You can see there's three boxes there in 1995, 2001, and 2012, where there were some legislative changes to the PILT payments. And then you also see one that's labeled county reassessment. So every 6 years, the counties reassess the value of the lands, and that then affects the PILT payment price. So the two most significant land types for PILT are DNR-administered lands that are held in fee title, and then also county-administered tax forfeit lands.
And Mr. Richards, Chair, this particular appropriation is in the Tax Committee, I believe, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, Mr. Chair, and I'll move on then.
Yes, okay.
Point made. So very quickly then, Mr. Chair, these last two slides, this one is shows our Game and Fish Fund. This is primarily used for the land record system. This system has been in the development and came online in September 2013, and it really helps us collect better data on our transactions. It's helping us with some continuous improvement efforts, and it's an ongoing system, so the money here goes to the ongoing maintenance and some enhancements that we're doing with the system. On the right-hand side, you can see the breakdown of the Natural Resources Fund. Basically, like I said before, it's minerals management. Some of the Natural Resource Fund goes to mining administration in the form of permit fees in and then out. Same with utility license fees in and then out. And then also a small amount for the land record system.
And Mr. Richards, on the minerals management account, that's money that comes out of the royalty money before it goes into the permanent funds, right? Into
yes.
The trust funds.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So 20% of initial collections of royalties is held, and then the department receives $2.8 million ultimately. There's a $3 million that's available, but we would get appropriated for about $2.8 million.
But $3 million is general fund?
Minerals management account. So after that minerals management account, 20% is held. So in the case of this last year, it's $70 million in mineral receipts. $14 million is held for the year. That's 20%, somewhere around there. It's held for the year at 20%. $3 million or just under $3 million is appropriated to the DNR for minerals management work, and then all that money is then turned back at the end of the year back to the school trust fund, or whatever fund it would be.
All what money?
So if you have $14 million,
yeah, you take away
held,
$3 million.
And we only use $2.8 or $3 million, then the remainder is returned.
What this annually. Says this says 5.8 though.
Mr. Chair, I was talking on an annual basis, so
okay.
I'm
all right. Okay.
Not going with the biennium there, sorry.
Okay. All right. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking over. You've got the trout and salmon account. Where do we all have salmon in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know.
He's a minerals guy. He's not.
We might have some in some mine pit lakes. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, maybe somebody else knows the answer. I'm puzzled. I'm wondering where we can go salmon fishing in our state that's closer.
Lake Superior.
North Shore? Lake Superior?
Oh, Mr. Chair, members, I mean, Lake Superior, yes. We do have salmon in Lake Superior.
Okay.
I just haven't caught one.
That'd be the only place, probably.
It's a small lake.
I got a question on minerals when you conclude.
So. Okay. Mr. Chair, okay. Almost done.
Okay.
If you take all the money away, what we've got here is a $97 million for biennial budget. About $72 million of that is pass-through money in PILT or revenue payments. The division operates off of about $25 million for the biennium. Like I said, we're currently staffed at about 90 to 95. Right? We're down from about 103 in 2012. We're a small division, but we work on some pretty weighty topics, and this budget proposal is really about maintaining what we have going for this division as far as our staffing. Our one change item is the creation of a conservation easement stewardship account. And essentially what this would do is create an interest-bearing account. The DNR manages over 1,000 conservation easements, and this would help ensure that there's a steady source of funds to do the monitoring of these conservation easements to ensure they're meeting their intended natural resource value. It would create some new statutory sections to fund the account. It would be initially funded through some transfers from the Forest of the Future Conservation Easement funds that are already appropriated for this, as well as the Outdoor Heritage funds that are already appropriated, established for conservation easement monitoring. And then it would be ultimately managed by the State Board of Investment with 5% of the balance then used to conduct the work of monitoring conservation easements. The change item includes a half FTE that would come out of that 5% that's taken from for management. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would wrap up my presentation, and I'd be happy to take any additional questions.
Senator Dietzick.
I think Senator Westrom had questions first.
Want to wait till he goes first.
You can go first. Ladies okay. First.
Thank you.
Then you have to wait for Senator Scalzi.
Oh, okay. That's fine, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So regarding the conservation easement monitoring fund, Is that set up? We've had discussions. I'll be blunt, and there was discussions on this in CMR, and some of the concerns brought up in LCCMR were, is this fund, and others may be working on this, is this fund outside of the state, was it Board of Investment? Because this fund is being put aside, and there was concerns that it is outside this other pool that we're monitoring. So we're putting funds into there to do monitoring, but who is managing it? Again, you said there's some statutory changes, and so what is going on there, and how are we addressing that? Because there were a variety of concerns.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dietzick, we have been working with LCCMR staff on this issue and also with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, so I believe there is agreeable solution in the language that everyone does support. Also, the Outdoor Heritage Fund may have possibly impacted as well. So I believe we've addressed everyone's concerns. There will be language in the governor's budget bill and also a bill that we will track separately, and hopefully we can maybe get you to sign on to that bill for us. Thank you.
So, Senator Westrom, do you want to pass this?
Yes, Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question related to that a disc of, and I couldn't pronounce the materials that you said could be marketed as countertops. Is there an effort to do that? Because that would seem to be a real lucrative program, and I'm wondering if anything's being done on that behalf.
Mr. Richards.
Mr. Chair, members, we consistently over time do look for dimension stone minerals in Minnesota. And we have had some interest from outside parties that would be interested in this. We would have to go through a leasing process and public notice of this and public disclosure and ultimately put it up for a bid. And so we haven't done that yet, but I can say that there is definitely interest in this same area. Around this area anyway is currently a U.S. Forest Service mine. It's a small quarry on U.S. Forest Service land, and it's mining a granite they call Mesabi Black. It's a little darker than this. I think ours is better. But it's being used at the World Trade Center right now for all the pavers and stones and walkways. And so Minnesota is shipping out dimension stone by the truckload to New York for use in the World Trade Center. Cold Spring Granite is mining it on U.S. Forest Service lands under a federal lease. So we certainly are interested in that, yes.
So, Mr. Chair, on that issue and then the question I had, the dimension stones you're talking about, you're aware of because the state owns the mineral rights in those areas. Is there other areas of the state that would have similar type stones but would be privately held mineral rights that could be doing it already or maybe are already doing it?
Mr. Chair, members, yes. There's wonderful dimension stones across the state of Minnesota. Certainly in the St. Cloud area, we have more granite outcrops that are mined today. We have in southern Minnesota the Kasota Vetter Stone, which was used at the Twins Stadium as that kind of tan stone that you see. So, yes, we do have dimension stone that is privately held throughout Minnesota that is currently mined today.
Okay. Question. Shifting a little bit in the minerals, but maybe you know the answer to this, maybe not. What do we know about any oil that Minnesota may have under it? And let me preface where I'm going with this question. And I've just wondered if you've heard similar conversations or know anything further. And ultimately, I'm just interested to know. But I've heard multiple times in the last few years that there are companies drilling in southeast North Dakota and northeast South Dakota, and that's right next to western Minnesota. I've had, over the years, a few constituents that have talked to me about oil that they firmly believe is under their farm land in western Minnesota. One believed it was at about 19,000 feet. But I'm just curious, with the stories I've heard corroborated with the exploration going on in eastern North Dakota and eastern South Dakota, have you heard anything like that? And is that anything that you've had discussions with?
Mr. Chair, members, there has been oil exploration in Minnesota. It was quite a number of years ago, and I think you're right that it was found deep. I haven't heard of anything recent that's been going on. I'd be happy to ask our mineral potential manager to look into what he knows about any oil exploration that's gone on in the state.
So, Mr. Richards, to that point, so if a Minnesota farmer were to drill down 5 miles and then go west 5 miles, would he be able to take the oil out of South Dakota and use it here in Minnesota? You don't have to answer that one.
Mr. Chair, horizontal drilling is amazing. Yes,
yes it is. Okay, any other questions of Mr. Richards?
And Mr. Chair, on that, Mr. Richards, generally, would most private landowners own those mineral rights of oil?
Mr. Chair, members, that's a good question. I don't know how the mineral rights on oil would play out. I've looked at, you know, surface rights, so gravel, for example, is owned by the property owner. Hard rock minerals such as copper, nickel, or iron deposits are owned by the mineral holder, in many cases the state of Minnesota or other private mineral holders. But I don't know the answer on oil. I would have to check into that.
If you could get back to me on that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Skinner.
Here's a part of the resident during this discussion. These are good. These are just very simple drugs. Skinner, he's a Skinner. It's all these siding.
Hey, Mr. Skinner, welcome. Introduce yourself and you may proceed.
Great, thanks. My name is Luke Skinner. I'm the director for the Division of Ecological and Water Resources in the DNR, and thank you for having us here this afternoon to talk about our division and some upcoming change efforts. The Division of Ecological and Water Resources promotes and delivers integrated land and water conservation to ensure healthy surface water, groundwater, and natural landscapes in the state. We provide critical information and regulatory oversight to foster natural resources, stewardship, and enhance recreational and economic uses in the state. And here's a few things that we worked on. We have a number of programs that we have. It's quite a wide breadth of programs within the division, including biological survey, scientific and natural areas, invasive species, environmental review, non-game wildlife, and dam safety, amongst a bunch of others. So a lot of different work that's ongoing across the state. Our funding for our division is quite diverse. A good portion of it comes from dedicated sources. As you can see, the general fund portion is primarily groundwater and invasive species. And a number of these others work on a variety of issues that we will, and I'll touch on a few of those as we go through. You know, what we do in the division kind of comes down to three major categories of work. The first one is inventory, monitoring, and analysis. And this is where we collect and deliver information on water, habitat, plants, and animals. We ensure environmental information is shared with the public and our local units of government so they can make wise decisions in their land use management. And that's one of the big things we do. We have a section on that that provides a lot of that, those dollars, and some will be on some of the groundwater issues as well. Our second major activity of work that we do in the division is conservation assistance and regulation. We ensure recreation and habitat and water quality through regulation of proposed changes to lakes and wetlands, rivers and streams. We provide oversight to local units of government for shoreland and floodplains and wild and scenic rivers. We also regulate water use and provide for sustainable use across the state. The third portion of our work that we do is ecosystem management and protection, and many of you are familiar with some of these in particular, including the invasive species program, for both aquatic and terrestrial invasive species prevention and management, management of scientific and natural areas, and our native prairie bank easement program, and also protection of threatened and endangered species to prevent state extinctions. Some of the dedicated funds that we have are broken out twofold. You can see with the Game and Fish Fund on there, it's broken into two pieces. The Heritage Enhancement is a part of that. And the primary focus of this work is around scientific and natural areas, our biological survey, aquatic plant management, stream habitat protection, terrestrial invasive species work out of that, not aquatic, just terrestrial in this, and wetland monitoring. We also do some work on fish contaminants and lake aeration and others as well on the fish and the game and fish side. On the Natural Resource Fund, you can see two major components are the water management and invasive species account. And the invasive species is prevention, management, and working with local units of government on both those, prevent the spread and manage the challenges that they have. Water management is all about our 103G authorities around water use permits, public water supply plans, water use data, and dam safety. And water recreation funding, as you can see there, also relies back on aquatic plants and aeration and some of the things to manage the aquatic systems. With that, we have three change items I'd like to talk about today. And the first one is an increase in the heritage enhancement account. And that is one of the primary challenges we have right now is that the non-game fund has been declining over time over the last several years through the recession and all. And it's about to go negative. So one of the things we're asking for is increase in heritage enhancement fund to supplement that. These dollars are matched with RIM dollars and with federal dollars, SWIG, state wildlife grant funds. And so we get kind of this double hit. So without those dollars, we lose that grant money in between. We would not only use this money to maintain our county biological survey, but also to do some work on restoration of endangered mussel species and some non-game work.
And this was a chickadee checkoff fund, right? Is that what this was?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Yeah, okay.
For the non-game. And that has been declining. And so what we're asking to do is actually reduce the appropriation from the non-game fund and increase this to match that, partly to make sure we can have a keep it from going structurally deficit in that account. So, and so some of the key work we also do is on mussel restoration, and we are matched with dollars from the Army Corps of Engineers across the state for those threatened and endangered species. Our second change item is on invasive species, which you're well aware of. Here we're asking for an increase to the watercraft surcharge from $5 to $10. That would increase revenues by over $1 million the first year and $1.3 million in the second year. The surcharge has not been increased since 1993, and it's been a major source of funding for the program long term. This current fiscal year, we received $400,000 in one-time dollars to help support all the work that the counties are doing with the new county dollars for AIS out there. This program also has a structural deficit that will go negative in 17. And so this will not only bring up some new dollars to maintain the current work we're doing and add two more planners to help with the county work, but also put some money back into that fund balance to keep it from going structurally red. And I believe it goes red in FY17.
Thank you. So some of these dollars are used to fill the gap left by the one-time money that we gave you last year in the tax committee. Is that what I'm gathering?
Mr. Skinner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that is correct.
Thank you.
Senator Root.
Mr. Chair, the water tax surcharge, where is that paid? Is that
Mr. Skinner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Root, that is correct. It comes from a surcharge on boat licenses.
This got nothing to do with the trailers, right?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Is this a substitute for the trailers in case we don't do it?
Mr. Chairman, members, the trailer decal, the dollars there's no revenue generated from that comes to the DNR from the trailer decal.
Where does it go?
Mr. Chairman, those dollars the way it was set up was to go to the vendor to actually implement the training and sticker program to cover their costs. The next one I want to touch on is Clean Water Legacy, and just give you a quick overview. As you're well aware, for the Clean Water Legacy dollars, the DNR provides information that leads to strategic investments for multiple benefits, including highlighting our hydrology as a major driver of our water quality impairments. And there's five categories of work that we do from this. As you can see, water monitoring and assessment, which is a lot of our impairment assessment across the state. Watershed restoration protection strategies are developing those plans to deal with those impairments. The drinking water is really about evaluating and increasing our groundwater monitoring capacities so we know what's going on. Non-point source implementations, shoreland programs, technical assistance, and restoration of streams and other habitats. And the last one, Applied Research and Tools, is all about our county geologic atlas and also additional resources to improve our hydrogeology that we know provide that information around that monitoring assessment. And here's the funding over time. You can see for the last five biennia for that, including or for the four biennium, including the recommendation for FY 16 and 17. So the change item, as you'll see, that we'll actually go through separately from this, you can see here, still highlights and improves and continues the work that's been done over the last 4 years to enhance this work. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm open to questions.
Any questions? Mr. Skinner. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Whoa. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. For the record, Forrest Bowe with the Division of Forestry and the DNR. Great to be back in front of the committee again.
Always a pleasure to see you.
I am going to take a little bit of time and tell you a little bit more about what we do. I think you heard a week or so ago about the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report on forest management, so you've got a little bit of a primer on what we do. I'm also going to talk about our budget and, of course, our change item. So let me just start out by saying a little bit about what we do. We put out fires. We spend a lot of time on wildfires, and, of course, our goal is to keep those fires small. We know that very aggressive initial attack on those wildfires saves costs, property, and damages. So we spend a lot of time doing that. We also spend time on pre-suppression, and so this is a little bit important because it has to do with the funding graphic that I'll talk about in a minute. So we put out fires directly. That's suppression activities. Our pre-suppression activities are things that we do in anticipation of a fire. It's getting equipment ready. It's recruiting and training personnel, all those kinds of things, maintaining things, and all of the planning efforts. And then the third activity around fire is in prevention. So we work to expand public awareness of the damages and costs of fires and spend time doing outreach to increase a positive public sentiment and kind of a more of a negative sentiment around arson and careless burning. You know, we want to change that. So we also spend a significant amount of time in timber management. So one of our primary goals is to offer 800,000 cords of wood annually for sale. By doing this, we provide 30% of the state's overall fiber to the industry. It keeps the industry and Minnesota strong, provides over 60,000 jobs and $16.1 billion worth of economic benefit. So it's a big contributor. And timber harvesting is one of the very few tools we have left, quite frankly. It has a similar effect as some of the old natural disturbances of the very large wildfires. So having timber harvest creates habitat and helps us efficiently and effectively maintain healthy and productive forests. We also do forest inventory, and of course all management activity starts with a very solid and timely inventory data. It's really an accurate on-the-ground picture of what we have to work with, and it allows us to sustain or do sustainable forest management. We were able to restart our forest inventory efforts 2 years ago. They were suspended back in 2007 for a number of years because of budget cuts. We also take care of forest roads. We have a system of over 2,300 miles of roads. These roads provide access for recreational use, hunting use, berry picking, bird watching, all kinds of general public use. These roads are very important to the tourism of Minnesota, keeping these open. We also know that they provide good access to our forests for the timber activities or even for putting out fires, so they serve a very important role. And studies have shown that 90% of our forest road use comes from recreational activities. We also do reforestation and silviculture work, and we reforest over 11,000 acres annually by either aerial seeding or hand planting seedlings. And we also seed another 30 to 35,000 acres. This is aerial seeding. So it really depends on the species that we want to regenerate. We spend time on forest health. We help address pest outbreaks that emerge. Some of the things you know that you read about frequently are the emerald ash borer, gypsy moth. For instance, 46% of our Minnesota forests are at risk by either one or both of those pests. So it's a significant concern. We also participate in forest certification, and this means that our lands are recognized by third-party independent inspectors as being well-managed. And we think that's very important, both for sustainability and also for our forest industry. And we also provide some outreach and technical assistance, helping communities, helping individual landowners, putting on training sessions, etc. So that's what we do. So, and here's the funding that we use for that.
Just for fun, how often do your state forest roads interact or serve as snowmobile trails or ATV trails or double up or meet up with these other trails?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. All of our state forest road systems are open to all motorized uses, except when posted closed. So essentially, most of them are open for snowmobiling or for ATV use. In some cases, they kind of serve as the backbone to get from one trail segment to another. We try to discourage. It's not what the users are looking for, our road system, but we know that it's an integral part of the overall trail system.
Okay. Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ball, you said really good things about your forest road systems and how so many tourists and recreators folks like to use these. But up in the Black Duck office, there's been a tremendously large number of gates going up on these roads. In many of those situations, there's private landowners, some places pretty significant farms that are on the other side of these gates. And the DNR has been asking the landowner who has to go through these gates to sign that they're going to be liable for anything that might happen to the road if they happen to be going up in there. They're requiring them to have the gates locked when they're up in there on their farm site. And if there was an emergency vehicle that needed to get up in there, there would be no way for them to get in there. So I think you need to go back and revisit some of these issues, particularly with the large number of these roads that are currently being gated, and not just closed when there is a spring breakup, and et cetera. They're basically being closed off. And when there's no private land up there, it's one thing, because then you're just inhibiting people from picking blueberries and pine cones and Princess Pine. But when there are private landowners up there on the other side of that gate, I think it would behoove us to try to keep those open as much as we can.
Good recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, thanks for the comment. With regard to the funding that we use, I want to point first to the general fund open appropriation. Of course, that's the biggest piece of the pie here. The general fund open is the purple one. It says 16%. Sorry about that. This is 16% of our overall budget. We use these funds for our pre-suppression and suppression activities to actually prepare for and put out the fires. This amount fluctuates from year to year. We work with MMB on this particular open appropriation. In fiscal year 12, we used $17 million. In fiscal year 13, which was a very severe fire season, we used $23 million. And last year, which was a pretty mild fire season, we used $15 million. So as you can see, that does go up and down frequently. I also want to point out that we do an annual report for the legislature. It's the annual report on emergency firefighting expenditures. It does talk about the direct and open appropriations, and so this is provided to the chairs and also is available in the library. So have that available for you. The next piece of the pie I'd like to talk about is the general fund, and you can see 41% of our budget is general fund dollars.
Mr. Bull.
Yes.
And then for your firefighting suppression equipment, you had some planes at the Hibbing Airport, but I think you sold a couple of those big planes, and how are you handling the replacement of those two planes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did sell.
I don't, maybe you're getting to it. Are you getting to that or no?
I hadn't had that as part of my presentation, but I'd be happy to answer the question.
Go ahead.
We did sell the CL-215s and have decided to utilize several more aircraft. They're a little bit smaller, but we think we can provide the same amount of punch with them. The CL-215s held about 4,500 gallons each per run. They took about 45 minutes to warm up. Basically to get them off the tarmac. We're going to use planes that are manufactured and floats that are manufactured here in Minnesota. We're going to lease 7 of those. They will be stationed at all the same spots, including Hibbing, and we think we can have equal, if not more, capacity with those smaller planes.
Okay. And you'll be stationing what? Two at one spot, two at another spot, or how are you going to do it?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. As you know, those planes get moved around the state depending on the fire danger in any particular area. But generally speaking, we have tanker bases at Hibbing, Bemidji. There's a tanker base in Ely that the federal government has. These smaller planes actually will allow us to go into smaller airports as well when the fire danger is really high in those areas.
Okay.
Thank you. Of our general direct appropriation, a piece of this is used for fire suppression as well. And we use about $14.2 million out of that direct appropriation over the biennium for prevention, pre-suppression, and suppression. Along with that, we passed through $580,000 to the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. They advise the governor, the legislature, and public agencies on current and future forest industry issues. Very important on how to retain and create jobs in the industry, and they do a lot of evaluation for us as well. The next biggest piece of the pie is the Natural Resources Fund. The majority of these dollars are in the form of the Forest Management Investment Account. This is the account where we utilize timber revenue, so we sell timber. That revenue comes into this account. It is appropriated by the legislature, and we use it for our timber work, our road maintenance, forest improvement and those types of activities. The special revenue funds include mainly reimbursements that we get from the federal government or from other states when we send firefighters or aircraft out of state. So it's a revolving account. We pay salaries out of that, and we get a reimbursement from other states or the federal government. In addition to that, the special revenue account includes gas tax dollars. We get about $1 million in gas tax annually. We pass 50% of that on to the counties for their county forest roads, and we use 50% for our forest roads. These are the non-bondable types of things, the basic road grading, blading, spot graveling, those kinds of things. The federal funds fluctuate frequently up and down. We get some dollars for forest stewardship, again for some fire prevention, urban and community forestry, some forest legacy, and forest health dollars. In the other category, this includes over $1 million a year in the Heritage Enhancement Account out of the Game and Fish Fund for our work in managing terrestrial invasive species and our work connected to the ecological classification system where we identify and map native plant communities. In the, I think I've covered the graphic on the left. This, again, is the Heritage Enhancement Account, and using our work there is connected to the ecological classification system. The Natural Resources Fund, I mentioned before, it's the timber revenue. This is the same level of appropriation as the last biennium. And I would point out that there is a miscellaneous statutory and other categories here. Those include dollars that we get from the sale of balsam boughs, burning permits, land sales, some cooperative agreements, and our work when our resource assessment unit works with other clients. So they bring in dollars when they do aerial photography or other kinds of resource analysis.
What's the trend line for the money coming
in? Okay, getting to the change item.
Do you have a prediction, like a trend line of the forest management investment account, how you see money's coming in the future?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The forest management investment account is stabilizing. I think we're seeing timber revenues stabilize. As you remember, this account was over appropriated in the last biennium. We reduced the FMIA appropriation by $2.5 million because it was over-appropriated. And now we see it stabilizing, so timber values are stabilizing. We also had some significant blowdown events in those years, 2011 and 2012, where we were selling a lot of damaged timber. So really getting about a third of its value coming back to the forest management investment account. So the good news is we see it stabilizing.
Well, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Bowe, to that. So is the utilization of, I mean, you mentioned earlier you had like an 800,000 core goal. Is the utilization about what you're expecting there, and are your forecasts going out that you think you're going to be hitting that into the future?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, been a goal of ours to reach that 800,000 cords every year. We think that's a good sustainable number for us. Some years we exceed and some years not quite meet that. It is, again, we sell about 30% of the, or provide about 30% of the state's fiber with 24% of the forested land base. Pretty much everything we sell gets, or put, pretty much everything we put up for market gets sold, with the exception of some species that just aren't being utilized right now. But if it's the species like pine and aspen, it gets sold.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the investment. This change item is for $4 million over the biennium, or $2 million per year. It covers three main focus areas. So I'll talk about state forest land management. I want to talk about forest health briefly, and also technology improvements. In the area of state forest land management, this investment provides continued funding to return to our desired 20-year inventory cycle. Now, as you recall, we started that inventory 2 years ago, and we'd like to keep that going. This allows us to visit stands once every 20 years to determine the age, the composition, the health of the stand, and a good inventory is critical to all the management actions. Next, this investment also allows us to increase stand treatments for long-term economic gain. Stand treatments include activities such as thinning or the removal of unwanted vegetation, and it promotes tree growth. This helps forest stands grow healthy and strong and continually gain economic value as they continue to grow older. And once they do reach economic age, they tend to sell at a much higher value. So it's an investment. This also allows us to maintain safer roads And we already talked about the extent of the road system. This provides $500,000 for the biennium, or an additional $250,000 per year to help maintain that road system. In addition to that, this investment will help us in the area of forest health. It allows us to increase our forest health monitoring and response. It provides an opportunity for us to evaluate and assess that the potential for pest outbreaks using inventory and remote sensing data. It provides technical on-the-ground assistance for the communities that are facing these pests that are coming at us, and it helps our ability to advise landowners on what to do. In addition to that, it will also help us monitor and treat invasive species on state forest lands. So that's important because it protects our economic investment. There's recreational values there that folks like and enjoy, and it protects that, and it also protects the diversity of plant and animal life.
So are you predicting that there will be more loggable timber also?
Mr. Chair, if you're talking about the investments in silviculture, yes, absolutely. These investments do provide more timber that would reach market in the future. It helps the trees grow faster, better, straighter, and produce more volume. Also, this funding would allow us to engage in the fight against invasives. You may recall our program called Clean Play Go. Been billboards around, maybe you've gotten a boot brush, those kinds of things. That program was started by our staff in the Division of Forestry from a federal grant 4 years ago. We've established this program. Now the federal grant has run out, and we'd really like to keep that fight against terrestrial invasives going. Finally, in the area of technology improvement, this funding provides an opportunity for us to improve our data management system. Recall the auditor's report on forest management. They were critical of our computer systems. I think they probably got that from our staff. Sometimes they don't work quite as well as they need to. So these are some critical updates.
What doesn't work as well, the staff or the computers?
Mr. Chair, having good technology allows us to have a much leaner workforce, and so these investments are critical to maintaining up and keeping up with our work.
It was the computers you were talking about, right?
That's correct, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
All right. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
That's it. I'd stand for questions.
You made a comment earlier about emerald ash borer and the like. About 46% of our forest could be exposed to it. Where is the 46% that you're specifically referring to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I talk about that, of course, the emerald ash borer has to do with all ash trees. So essentially, our state is blessed with ash. We have it from north to south, a lot of black ash in the north part of the state, and green ash in the in central and southern. So that's what I talk about when I think about the emerald ash borer. Can expand all throughout the state. The gypsy moth seems to enjoy aspen right now, especially on the North Shore. There's quarantines in place. But gypsy moth in the future could have a much much more impact on our oak resource. Seems like the aspen does bounce back, but if gypsy moth is prevalent, it really tends to take out the oak and for long term. So we are certainly concerned about that.
Okay. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, on the gypsy moth, what do they do that's harmful or damaging to kill trees or hurt them? And aren't they a natural predator to some aphids or some other insect that's in the agriculture community, or am I mixing things up here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, I'm not. You probably know more about what the natural predator or who eats who out there. with aphids. But the gypsy moth will have an impact on species, and it's really the sustained populations. I think, you know, if we can keep populations small, trees can respond. Essentially, the gypsy moth removes the leaves from the trees, eats the leaves. If that happens year after year after year, the tree will eventually die. And that's why it's important that we stay on top of those outbreaks and try to disrupt those as best we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I was thinking it was maybe 10 years ago that they were using gypsy moths in connection with the Department of Ag on some natural pest control. But I see. So the gypsy moth isn't like the emerald ash borer, where its presence is going to likely kill the ash tree. It's just, it's like grasshoppers. You get too many of them, and they're going to kill your field. But if there's a low number of them, they're going to eat some greens, but not more than what a tree can sustain. Is that right,
Mr. Bull?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, that is right. So it's important that we keep the population in check. Once it gets out of hand and it's repeated year after year of high populations, then it actually does kill the vegetation. It will kill the tree.
Okay.
And one just curious question that I've always wondered, how did you get the name Forest?
That's a great question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My father was a DNR forester for 40 years with the department, and I have no idea whether that had any influence on me or not.
Okay.
So, well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Perhaps in my case, my wife and I had twins, and we each got to pick our best, most favorite name, so maybe his mother and father picked half the syllables each.
Okay, we're going to stop there for today. If you're at your desk or if you're at your seat, why don't you put these folders into the save section, and when you pick them up, I guess we can put them back. Oh, well, never mind. We'll take care of it. I guess the staff will take care of it. And Monday, what do we got on Monday? We're going to continue this, but what is... and maybe the Bureau of Mediation Services. So we'll stop now because there's another committee coming in here today, and I want to give whoever's next sufficient time to give us their testimony. So with that, thank you all, and meeting adjourned.